This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Good Bad Billionaire from the BBC World Service.
The podcast exploring the minds, the motives and the money of some of the world's richest individuals.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. The listener chased for a £60,000 electricity bill she didn't owe, as exclusive new figures reveal more people are seeking help about debts being passed to collection agencies. And mortgage rates edge down, almost imperceptibly, so is the cost of buying a home beginning to fall at last? But first, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, has swept to power promising change. But there'll be no change in the rates of the three big taxes we pay, income tax, national insurance and VAT. That's to protect what the manifesto called working people. So what will the new Labour government mean for our money? One thing that has changed, of course, is that for the first time for three quarters of a century, we have a Chancellor of the Exchequer who is an economist. And Rachel Reeves is not just any old economist. She's a former Bank of England economist. You really couldn't get more establishment than that. And of course, she's also a trailblazer, the first woman ever to be Chancellor. Here she is setting out her vision to Treasury staff on Friday afternoon.
The central mission of this government will be to restore economic growth. I will judge my time in office as a success if I know that at the end of it, there are working class kids from ordinary backgrounds, living richer lives, their horizons expanded and their potential realised. If we are leaving to the next generation a country that is more prosperous, with more good jobs paying decent wages, and a country better able to thrive in an uncertain world.
Well, what do the people in her constituency of Leeds, West and Pudsey think she should do to help them? Dan Whitworth went to find out.
Because I'm so young and the mortgages are becoming a thing, well, I've worked since I was 15, so like non-existent for my generation. Like even thinking about starting a mortgage seems like out of the window for me.
Just unaffordable, you mean?
Yeah, unaffordable. I'd like to see some sort of funding being put towards young people starting mortgages, like myself.
Kingsley, 34, I'm from Pudsey. So Kingsley, like I say, Rachel Reeves, your MP, she's going to be everybody's new Chancellor. Who's this here? You got a little one?
Noah.
So, and how old's Noah?
Two.
Right, they're not cheap.
They're not.
So, what kind of help would you want to see from Rachel Reeves?
Childcare reduced, but also school meals more available to kids.
I work 3 days a week. My wage just covers my bills, really. Don't get much left out of it. So, I would like to see other people being able to live better. Price of food and things coming down as that, and, you know, inflation mostly.
What kind of pressures are you under, and what kind of help do you want to see from your local MP, the new Chancellor?
VAT could do with coming down. You know, I think gas and electric bills are atrocious, and why should people have to do without food to heat their homes? I'm on a state pension. Trying to make ends meet is not easy, so help there would be nice.
Well, listening to that is Michael McMahon, an economics professor at Oxford University. Michael McMahon, Rachel Reeves was an economist at the Bank of England for 6 years, and I believe you worked alongside her there. How will she cope with being Chancellor?
Well, that's right. We both worked in an international division. We were both completely new in, you know, in the job when we started, but it was an absolutely fantastic group of people to work with, you know, people dedicated to sort of understanding what's going on and trying to think together and work together to come up with understanding what's going on. And you know, I haven't seen Rachel very much in the intervening years, but I've seen her twice at sort of gatherings that her and her staff attended of economists, where she was there listening to a sort of broad swathe of views on what's going on and what's happening. So, you know, I think that's what you'll get. You'll get someone who's a trained economist, will think hard and carefully about a lot of the challenges, and some of the clips you just played highlight the sort of breadth of those. But, you know, Rachel will go into a treasury that's also filled with these sort of public servants, and she'll be working alongside them trying to come up with some solutions.
Yes, I mean, she's the first real economist since just after World War II, I think, Hugh Dalton. But will that mean a more traditional economic approach on spending and on borrowing than we've seen in the past?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily more traditional. I think one thing that the economics training will give her is a very clear sort of understanding of the importance of the institutions, the importance of the stability of policies with a sort of clear strategy and goal in mind. She'll think hard about what economists call trade-offs. You know, sometimes when you give in one place, you have to take somewhere else, and other times the knock-on effects elsewhere in the economy from policy. So I think that's what we'll get. We'll get a sort of a deeper, more thoughtful set of policies, I hope.
So it could be good for things like interest rates, the markets, things like that. But those people in Leeds, as you mentioned, raising some of the economic challenges they're facing, buying a home, paying bills, price of energy and food, what would be the big first big economic decision for her to make?
Well, I don't think there's just one. I think what's really needed, and I think she has set this out, and I think it's true. You know, growth is the thing that could really help the UK, but getting growth is very difficult. There's not a single dashboard. It's not a cockpit on the Chancellor's new desk where she can just tick a button and turn on the switch of growth.
No.
So it's going to take some big policies that are coordinated across departments.
Right. Well, we'll see how she copes. And stay with us, of course. But we've been talking to, throughout this campaign, listeners about what you wanted to see from your new government. And here's a voice note sent to us in the early hours of Friday morning from Valiapan, who works in financial services.
I hope that there are no more tax rises, as people are stretched to manage their livelihood with higher inflation and mortgage rates. My question really is, what are the immediate impact to the people on labour policies?
Well, also with us here to help Valiapan out is Nimesh Shah, Chief Executive of Accountants Blick Rothenberg. Now, Nimesh, Labour's promised no rise in national insurance rates, no rise in any of the rates of income tax or the rate of VAT. What changes could Labour make to raise the money we know it will need but keep to that promise?
Yeah, Paul, they've backed themselves into a bit of a corner with those three big taxes. I'd add a fourth in there as well, corporation tax. That's about 80% of the total tax take in the UK. So there's not much room for manoeuvre in terms of levers that Rachel Reeves can pull. But the things that I would be looking out for here is tax on investments, so dividend income, interest income, and possibly inheritance taxes and capital gains taxes as well.
Right, so we could see raises in the rates of dividend income tax. I mean, isn't that covered by the promise, or maybe it's not? Maybe they're not working people, I don't know.
Well, I suppose there's technicalities here and how you describe working people, how you describe no raises to income taxes as well. So the current rates of dividend income tax are about 5 or 6% lower than the main rates of income tax. So there is room and flex there to do something.
Yeah. And what about tax thresholds? We've talked about this many times on the programme. They've been frozen since 2021. Previous government planned to keep them frozen till 2028. Rachel Reeves has said she'd like to raise them, but hinted so strongly that she couldn't afford to. Well, what's the effect of those frozen thresholds? We're all paying more tax, aren't we, as a result of them?
Yeah, that's right. And this policy is due to run under Jeremy Hunt until 2028. And I suppose Rachel Reeves might be tempted to make it run until the end of the parliament as well. We talked about no raises to income tax or national insurance, but this effectively is an increase to your tax bill. Those thresholds that we've had since 2021, they've not moved. And as your wages go up, as your income goes up, people are getting dragged into those higher rates of tax or tax itself. So the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, is expecting an additional 3 million higher rate and additional rate taxpayers by 2028, just because of the effect of those frozen allowances. And I should add as well, currently, well-known think tanks like the IFS have said the effect of frozen allowances is essentially a 6% increase on the basic rate of income tax.
Wow. So although the promise is, we won't raise rates, if Rachel Reeves carries on freezing them, copies the Conservative policy, that will mean more people paying tax, more people paying higher rates of tax.
Yeah, that's right. And this is a real cash cow for the government. So I can see why Rachel Reeves doesn't want to stop that policy.
It's hard to give up the addiction to it, really, isn't it? I should add, in Scotland, thresholds and rates have not been frozen. They've gone up because the Scottish government controls most of those. Professor McMahon, the budget and tax are one thing. How will our personal finances be affected, in your view, by the big economic decisions Rachel Reeves has to make?
Well, like I say, I think some of the things are going to cost money. And the question that you were just answering is, where does that come from? It seems like it's not going to come from most people's sort of direct tax bill unless their wages go up, which we hope they do. So you know, generating growth will be good for us, generating higher wages to catch up. Many people's standards of living have fallen in what economists call real terms. So building that growth would be the real big outcome, where providing sort of secure support for the most needy while also allowing working people to sort of live a good standard of living. That's the challenge. That's what faces her.
Yes, but as you say, there's no lever a Chancellor can pull to make growth, or they'd all be doing it, wouldn't they? So that's what we have to watch. Will she achieve that first objective she set out to her staff of raising growth? And Nimesh Shah, briefly, record amounts raised from inheritance tax we heard the other day, and John in St Albans sent us a voice note on Friday. He was concerned about inheritance and wealth taxes. You mentioned some of them. Do you expect changes in inheritance tax?
Well, inheritance tax has been slowly rising over the last 5 or 10 years. So actually, Rachel Reeves may not need to do anything, but there are some attractive areas that she might want to target, such as the 7-year rule for gifting. We have an unlimited amount that someone can gift during their lifetime, and provided they survive 7 years, that's outside of this straight for inheritance taxes. And then we have some very valuable reliefs, business relief and agricultural property relief. And those, again, could be limited.
So there are things she might do there. Nimesh Shah, Blick Rothenberg and Professor Michael McMahon of Oxford University, thanks. Now, another big issue you've asked us about is the cost of social care. So on Wednesday, Moneybox Live with Felicity Hannan will be taking a closer look at the cost of social care and, of course, what Labour might now do about it. Tell us your experiences and concerns. Moneybox@bbc.co.uk. Leave a number if you can. Now, figures seen exclusively by Moneybox show a big rise in the number of people seeking help because their energy supplier has asked an outside agency to enforce payment of a bill that many of them say they don't owe. And hundreds of you have emailed us about similar problems. Gail, Nigel, Victoria, Lee, just four of those emailing with stories of incorrect bills and heavy-handed payment tactics. Moneybox reporter Dan Whitworth has seen these new numbers. Dan.
Well, last year, Paul, more than 4,500 people went to Citizens Advice for help after their energy suppliers passed their bills on to these debt collection agencies. That is nearly double the number in 2020. Now, of course, that's a tiny percentage of the 30 million or so energy companies, but the near 90% increase in just 4 years tells us how this problem is growing. Well, I went to speak to Theresa Newsham and her daughter Karen at their home in Lancaster. Theresa received bills for tens of thousands of pounds, which she knew must be wrong. But after 5 months of trying to get it sorted, Theresa was told the debt had been passed to a debt collection agency. So that's the meter, literally right by your front door, yeah. As easily accessible as anything. Thank you.
As you can see, it's not huge.
Just explain to me the energy that you use. There's no gas in this whole flat. It's all electric. So just talk me through it, Theresa. How does it work?
Storage heaters.
So that's just like a normal radiator-sized thing. Yeah. Oh, OK, but all electric.
Yes.
OK.
And then into the kitchen where you've got an electric cooker. And you've got the boiler. It's all electric.
And so... normally you pay...
These are just weekly meter readings, which I've taken on a weekly basis.
We go back to 2022.
Yes.
So you are extremely well across the energy you use. And a normal month for you, you pay by direct debit.
Paid by direct debit.
Roughly speaking, how much is that per month?
£8 and pence, something pence.
So they're the meter readings.
Yeah.
Now we're going to start on this rather large pile of bills. The most important one here, Theresa, is the one on the top.
Your new balance on the 13th of June 2024 is -62,324.71.
Well, what do you make of that? You're trying not to swear, aren't you? let me give you a word. Bonkers?
Yeah, bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. Well, it's scary. Absolutely scary. I know it's wrong.
And Theresa, your daughter Karen's been helping out. You've got a message. Just read that message to me as well, please.
Dear Theresa, as we still haven't heard from you about your outstanding electricity bill of £60,779.26, we've now passed your details on to our debt collection agency.
What do you make of how your mum's been treated here?
I can understand mistakes, but when it goes on for this length of time and you have someone who's so worried about it, and we've expressed this over the phone to British Gas, you know, my mum is a pensioner, she's not good in her health, it's worrying. This has gone on for months and months and it's now been passed to the debt collection.
What was your instant reaction when you saw that message about the debt collection agency? I mean, that's a bill is one thing, but that's serious.
Well, you worry then because you think, well, when is this going to end? When are they actually going to sort it out? After all, who else do we speak to? Who else, where else do we turn to get an answer for my mum to get this sorted out?
I thought they would force me to pay it. I'd have to sell my home to go and pay this money, even though I know I don't owe it.
What an extraordinary and terrifying story, Dan, for Teresa. What's British Gas had to say about it?
Well, it told me the bill was clearly wrong and should never even have been sent out, and that it's contacted Teresa and the family to apologise. It's also written off a debt of several hundred pounds for current charges as a sort of gesture of goodwill, whilst waiting for the outcome of an investigation by the Energy Ombudsman.
Thanks, Dan. Well, listening to that is Alex Belsham-Harris. He's head of Energy Consumer Markets at Citizens Advice. Alex Belsham-Harris, a £60,000 electricity bill for a small flat, 5 months of family members trying to sort it out. But it wasn't till the intervention of this programme that British Gas put it right. What's going wrong with energy suppliers?
Yeah, it's a terrible experience and one that should never have happened, clearly. I think we're seeing a number of these cases at Citizens Advice for different reasons. Some are related to suppliers moving to different billing systems, and that can sometimes give rise to errors like these. And sadly, in a lot of cases, people, as a result of rising prices, getting bills that are accurate but much higher than they're used to. But what's really clear is that energy suppliers, in too many of the cases that we're seeing, aren't taking the opportunities to act early, either by stopping these sort of rogue bills before they even go out, which is the ideal situation, or resolving these problems at the first opportunity. And letting them drag on till they end up with a debt collector is clearly wrong.
Yes, I mean, as I said, we've had hundreds of emails. In fact, we've had two just before the programme came on air. Ivan has been threatened very similarly with debt collection by British Gas, and Patricia has had a similar problem with another energy supplier. What can people do if their supplier just won't listen?
Yeah, I mean, always the best thing to be doing is engaging with your energy supplier. If you are getting these sort of letters, don't sort of bury your head in the sand about them. But we know from the cases coming to us at Citizens Advice, too often people aren't then getting the support they need. What should be happening is that energy suppliers should look at any billing errors, identify those and work with you to solve them. Or if you do genuinely owe money, they should be supporting you to put in place a affordable repayment plan. If that's not happening, do always contact an organisation like Citizens Advice. We're here to help people. And also, I think, as Teresa has done in her case, do take your case to the Energy Ombudsman. If it's not been resolved after 8 weeks, they'll be able to look at the case independently and suggest a resolution.
Yes, and I mean, we know there's millions of people with £3.1 billion of debt to energy companies that they're finding difficulties paying. The Energy UK, which speaks for the energy companies, said affordability remains a big concern for customers and the energy sector, and wants everyone, charities, the new government, them to work together. Is there one thing, very, very briefly, in a word, one thing they could do to solve this problem?
Energy suppliers need to do much more to be consistently supporting their customers, for sure. But yes, there's more that the energy sector, obviously the new government, can be doing to put in place sustainable support for people who really are struggling with their bills.
Yeah, so perhaps at least meet you all and talk about it. Alex Belsham-Harris from Citizens Advice, thanks. Now, there are faint hints that mortgage rates may be creeping downwards. The financial data firm Moneyfact says some of the biggest lenders like Halifax, Virgin Money, Royal Bank of Scotland, HSBC, Barclays have all reduced some of their rates, though I have to say by fractions of one percentage point. It's almost 2 years since mortgage rates jumped, of course, after the Kwarteng Truss mini-budget in 2022, and average rates for 2 and 5 year fixed deals remain closer to 6% than 5% even now. That's bad news, of course, for the more than 1.5 million people whose existing deals will end this year. Our reporter Joe Krasner spoke to people in Liverpool about their mortgages.
It's fixed. Fixed rate mortgage for 5 years from 2020, so it's up next year.
So what's your interest rate now?
2.3, so we got it quite good.
Do you have any concerns about it finishing at the end of next year?
Yeah, because the interest rates have gone skyrocketing now, so we got them okay, whereas obviously now it's going to be a lot more. We're going to try and fix it again because you just don't know what is going to happen.
And what do you think it's going to be in a year's time?
Something around 7 to 10%. That's if it doesn't go up again.
So we're on a tracker mortgage for 2 years. We currently pay £880 a month, which has gone up from the £599 we used to pay 2 years ago. But we are up for renewal in September and we're hoping for better rates.
You know, a difference of about 300 is too much. We'll be looking for something cheaper.
Hopefully a fixed rate this time. We'd prefer not to be on another tracker, but we didn't really feel we had a choice when renewal came up and things were just skyrocketing. It was a way to keep the mortgage down, even if it was temporary.
Well, listening to that is Georgie Dye. She's a mortgage broker from Tembo Money. Georgie Dye, some obvious concerns there in Liverpool. Have you seen rates coming down in recent weeks?
Yeah, here at Tembo, we have seen a gradual, marginal decrease in rates. Hopefully it's a good sign of things to come.
Yes, and why is that? Why are they beginning to come down?
The rate changes we've currently seen, it's probably driven by competition amongst the lenders and also swap rate movements. So swap rates is basically the money which is brought and sold in the market. And when that does reduce, then interest rates do tend to reduce with that.
Yes, because people don't realise always, do they, that mortgage lenders don't have a huge pile of money they lend to us. They go out and borrow it and lend it to us at a slightly higher rate. So if the rates they pay come down, they could do it. And you said competitiveness. I mean, are they trying to attract business through this?
Yeah, so they also want to keep their service levels in check. So it's always, that's why rates will change marginally, whether they are wanting more business, if they don't want more business, to keep their service levels there as well.
Yes. Now, the smallest change in the MoneyFacts figures that they sent to us was by Barclays, which on Friday, according to the figures, reduced one of its fixed rate mortgages by 0.03% and others are sort of 0.17 percentage points. How much difference do these really tiny cuts make?
It does make a difference. So, for example, HSBC, they reduced their rate by 0.14%. On a mortgage balance of around £100,000, that'll save you about £8 a month. But on a £250,000 mortgage, that'll be saving you around £20 a month. So obviously, it all does add up.
Yeah, so even if they're fractions of a percent, it's worth looking for them. I mean, I must say I've had a tweet, actually, or an X, whatever you call it now, a post from Kirsten, who said, my mortgage expires on the 31st of August, and then there's a kind of frightened emoji after it. But what should she be thinking of now with her mortgage running out in, what, less than 2 months?
I mean, she's definitely not alone thinking that, but basically just get in touch with an advisor. The sooner you do it, you don't bury your head in the sand, the better the results will be.
Yes. And if you do get in touch with an advisor, even before your rate runs out, can you sort of fix something then that will then happen at the end of August?
Yeah, so you can look around 6 months prior to your end date for your fixed rate or tracker rate. And if rates go down from when you secured that new rate for your remortgage, you can then look to review that rate to go down to the lender's lower rate at that time.
Mm. And, you know, I mentioned average rates earlier, sort of closer to 6% than 5% at the moment. And there's a woman we heard from in Liverpool saying she's expecting a 7 to 10% rate. Some people can't get the best rates, can they? Briefly.
No, they can't. It's just down to individual circumstances. They may have some adverse, which does have an impact on their rate.
Yeah, so adverse or indeed a small deposit, I suppose, or not much equity in your property.
Yeah, exactly.
Georgie Dye of Tembo Money, thanks very much for that. And emails are coming in on that, on business property relief and on the scandal, as people call it, of British Gas. Well, a couple of days of historic change, but no change here at the Moneybox podcast, always your trusted guide to your finances. Let us know your hopes and fears for the new government, moneybox@bbc.co.uk. We do read them all and you might get on the show, as people did today. And if you don't subscribe to Moneybox on BBC Sounds, now is the perfect time to do so you never miss an episode about the changes ahead. In this podcast, the reporters were Dan Whitworth and Joe Krasner, researcher Catherine Lund, studio manager Wayne Parks, studio producer was Craig Henderson. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, just where is that evidence?
For years, a witness's evidence has been locked away.
I've seen the dark side.
He warned a chemical is coming.
It's a silent killer.
And that he was a target.
Forced into a witness protection programme.
We're Dan Ashby and Lucy Taylor, two investigative journalists, joined by the Hollywood star, Michael Sheen.
Do you think someone's going to try and kill us?
From BBC Radio 4, an unsettling investigation into a chemical secret unravels.
They don't have any record of him.
What?
Listen now to Bury the Last Witness on BBC Sounds.